Hi, Eddie here. Red and I have used Zencastr to record all of our episodes of Punk Rock Elite because it's easy, browser-based, and it gives us separate tracks that are easy for me to edit. It can also be used for 4K video too. Maybe we'll try that one day. It's really easy to use. It can do a lot of the editing for you, clipping out your ums and ahs, and adding an EQ to bring out the best in your voice, all from a single website. If you want to make a podcast but aren't sure how to go about it, then Zencastr provides everything you need to record, edit, and distribute your new show to Spotify, Apple, and a ton of other places that people get their podcasts. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code PUNKROCKELITE, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Punk Rock Elite, a podcast about NoFX. It's Liza and Louise coming back at you. We've not been them for a while, so we're going to be them again. Punk Rock Elite podcast, a podcast about NoFX, and we'll explain the irony in that name when we get to the meat of the show. But I'm Eddie French, and I'm joined by...
Red Redmond, that is me.
That is you, and how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah.
Good.
Things are fine. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you, yes. This is the first proper episode published since we've been for our little jaunt. Where was it? Swadlincote?
Swadlincote, yeah. We were in Swad, as it's locally known.
We were getting down with the Swad Squad. That's what we were doing. Swad goals, hashtag. Oh, man, I haven't done any of the social media with hashtag Swad goals, and I'm sure everyone in Swad does that. That's probably old, but there's a good reason that we were there.
Yeah, like it's been so great as well, like, because I've never been in a studio before.
Have you not?
Not like proper one, I don't think.
Fair enough. It's been a long time since I've been in one. Up until recently known as Midlife Elite band, which is Red, myself, Tom and Nihilism from the Midlife Punk podcast. Shout out to them, follow them, listen to them. For the Punk and Droblick tribute album that we are arranging, we went in to do our two songs. Mm-hmm. With my friend Ajit, now our friend Ajit, in Hellfire Studios in Swad. And it was proper cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Really, really top fun. Ajit's great. We managed to track, which means record, everyone. Managed to track all of the both of the songs in about 8 or 9 hours, depending on whether you include lunch break. And, you know, coffee and all of that kind of stuff. Like, if we'd have just sat down and done it, we'd have probably rattled it out in, like, 4 hours. It was ridiculous.
And Ajit's got some amazing experience as well. Like, he's worked with bands like Slayer and Pantera.
I need to adjust that. He's not worked with those two. He has worked with Megadeth.
Oh,
He has the discs, the platinum discs and stuff on his wall.
Oh, I assumed that he'd... So, like...
It did say awarded to Ajit Hellfire Gill, and I don't know quite how that works. I never asked him how they ended up in his possession. But on his client list, it doesn't say Slayer and Pantera, but there is Megadeth, Wu-Tang Clan, all sorts of... and also loads of groups that I'm not familiar with.
Oh, I thought he'd, like, remixed, like, the 30th... anniversary of Cowboys from Hell, but I must be mistaken.
Oh, maybe. Do you know what? It's entirely possible that he did, but I imagine I would have heard more about it on social media.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't imagine...
he'd keep that quiet.
No. Ajit is... any metal fans listening may... You'll definitely know people who know Ajit. He's like a known quantity in that world. I met him when I was 18, and he was I think in his early 20s. But he is like the biggest Metallica fan in the world. And if you think you are, just sit down. He's got it covered. Ajit used to say, he plays guitar, a phenomenal guitarist. He knows all of that stuff, but yeah, he's a thrash guy through and through. He used to sit there, he used to have like all of the, like the music books, like the tab books of Slayer and stuff. And he'd sit there and he'd like, and he'd look through it trying to remind himself of stuff. And he'd go, this tab is wrong. Like, this isn't right. That isn't how it goes. Listen, and then spend ages. So he's that kind of a details guy. he's wonderful. We had a fantastic time. And so then, yeah, all of Sunday, he said, "Oh yeah, no, don't you worry. I'll have something with you. I'll have a first mix with you on Sunday." And then he was like, "Oh, do you know what? It turned out it took a bit longer, so it'll be with you on Monday." And we're like, "Oh no!" Like that was unreasonable. We became very impatient children when we were waiting for it because we were super excited about it. And mm-hmm. then it turned up, came out, and then he sent it to us on Monday. And of course, I was building a wardrobe, so I didn't want to listen to it on my phone in yeah. someone else's house. So I had to wait till I got home, and it was all. But yeah, it was great. So we've done the Bruise and Laurie Myers, and they sound stupid.
We're very happy with ourselves, aren't we?
We really are. Yeah, we are. Yeah, it was. I mean, I'm super impressed because I don't think any of us took more than about three takes. And this might, we might be in love with our own shit. So when you hear it, you might go, "Yeah, it sounds like a third take." yeah. We don't know, but we're kind of blinded by it all at the moment, or whatever the aural deafened. We're deafened by it at the moment. So yeah, no, it's great. I think Tom is the hero of it all. Certainly on the Bruise, because yeah. those drums are just insane.
Nah, Tom's done a really, really good job. And he was quite clever, really, as well, because he got the drums down early. You know, like yeah. we woke up in the morning and he was like, "Right, drum tracks." And so he recorded
that
the drums.
That is the typical way it's recorded.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes sense to get that down yeah. so the rest of us have it for the guide track. Mm. But it just meant that he got to... I suppose relax a little sooner than the rest of us.
And he did, yeah. He got to sit down and just sort of go, "Yeah, whatever." You know, he could go off and, you know, he didn't have to pay attention to what we were doing all the time because it wasn't going to affect his performance. We were all playing to his, basically, and it was great. Ajit made a point of saying just how tight a drummer he was when I stayed behind a little bit longer because I hadn't seen Ajit in ages, so. You three, sort of once we'd done, like, I think the gang vocals for the Bruise were the last thing that we recorded.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think everyone had their stuff in the car before we got to the Bruise. Like everyone was like literally just sort of go, I go, so just finish it and go, oi. All right, we're off home now, bye. It was like immediately straight into the car and off, which is fine. Mind you, none of us, I lived the furthest away and I was less than 2 hours away. So it wasn't like an arduous journey home for anyone particularly. I stuck around for a little bit. I stuck around till maybe that. You left about six, didn't you? Somewhere like that.
Something like that. Maybe, I think a little bit later than that. Maybe 7:30.
Something like that. I think I stuck around till about 9:30. Ajit was looking at the drum track on the screen and was like, "Wow, this guy's tight as anything." He's like, "Look at that. That could have been done by a machine." So, That was pretty cool, and everyone else did great as well. It all came out sounding wonderful. So yeah, that's just what if you're interested in recording and you are anywhere in the UK, you could do a lot worse than considering Hellfire.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great. He knows what he's doing. He is so good at it. He just spends all of his time doing it. It's incredible. So yeah, get we'll put the links in the description.
Maybe this is like because we're like a little bit inexperienced, or maybe I am, but like we were blown away by the amount of stuff that's just in the computer now in a studio. Like we were like, "Oh, we'll get out some amps and some pedals," and it's like, "No, that is not how we do it anymore."
yeah, it's not. It's absolutely bonkers because, and the musos might get annoyed about this, and you know, fine, whatevs.
just listen to it. But now they know. They'll go, yeah, you can tell that was done with a computer, actually, because of... Right. But you literally can't tell.
Don't worry. I don't think the musos are listening to the NoFX podcast.
Oh, you're right, actually. Yeah, that's true. Oh, we're safe then. But yeah, basically, he's got a room with, like, an Eddie Van Halen 5150. He's got a Mesa Boogie dual rack. He's got a JCM whatever. He's got these, and he said, oh, I've not used these in 7 years.
Well, that was the room that we recorded the podcast in. Like, we didn't do any music in the room with all of the ridiculously expensive amps.
Yeah, all of the like... All of the bucket list amps, the dream amps that people want for rock and metal. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, I mean, I keep them. We might use them again one day. But, you know, most people are just like, oh, yeah, we'll just use this because it sounds better. Yeah. It's incredible. And I honestly didn't think Ajit would go that way. But the thing is that he has got like the really, really clever, good versions of all of the stuff that most people have access to.
Yes.
So he's got sort of like next gen stuff that's like really for the, ironically, for the elite. And it's, it was fun because we were going through like different amp tones and stuff. And he's like, okay, so I sort of described what sort of tone I wanted. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't like anything too saturated. I like it sort of overdriven rather than like distorted. And he's like, okay, maybe something like this. Puts this one on, I go, oh, that sounds good. He's like, okay, let's try out some other ones. First one, went back again.
Yeah, what's the
like,
first one?
Yeah, I was like, this first one, it sounds great.
No, you nailed it.
It was like, that's absolutely what I wanted. Yeah, thank you. So, tremendous. I think on, the Bruise, I think Nihilism was very, very lucky to play through Lemmy's rig, Air Force One, which you don't get to do.
No, but you don't.
Apparently you do now. So, yeah, it was great. But, yeah, the drums and all the vocals were recorded in the usual way. Not to a click either. That was just Tom and me. I play like a guide track, played along with Tom to record the drums, and then we just played to Tom's drum track.
Yeah.
And just sort of built it up, and then I put a better guitar take on the end. It was like, it reminded me of, you know, in Shrek.
Yeah.
When it was supposed to be for Chris Farley, and then he passed away,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a Chris Farley vehicle, or certainly with him in mind. And then he passed away. Mike Myers got the job, and apparently he recorded it like a sort of Canadian yokel kind of thing, like a sort of a wild woodsman kind of guy. And then he heard everyone else's recordings. He heard like Eddie Murphy and Cameron Diaz and all this stuff, and he went, oh, mine's really shit compared to that, and went in and redid it, and that's when he chose the Scottish voice and stuff. But it's basically that was I did my Canadian voice guitar track for everyone to play along to, and then replaced it with the Scottish one at the end. That's an analogy that I never thought I'd make about recording, but yeah, anyway, long story short, which is too late for that now, but yeah, we were just very, very excited to have done something proper. And also, I woke up that morning, and while we were sort of having coffee and stuff, I was looking at my Facebook memories. It was a year to the day that we announced that this podcast was happening.
Yeah.
Like the day we dropped the trailer, I think, was a year to the day we were recording a song for a tribute album that came about because of this stupid bloody podcast. So what a weird year. Can't say fairer than that. What are we talking about today, Red?
We are talking about Suffer by Bad Religion.
We are. This is a peer pressure. No, this is not peer pressure. This is Under the Influence.
Oh, yeah.
Because we know how much Mike loves to be under the influence. Suffer by Bad Religion is a record that Mike has spoken about a lot.
And we want to explore artists that influence NoFX, particularly around, you know, their formation, around their earlier years. So yeah, we're trying to look at their influences, and we thought that Bad Religion, or Suffer specifically by Bad Religion, would be a good place to start, particularly with NoFX having done a parody of Suffer. It's not quite a parody of Suffer, but it is a similarly named EP with satirical artwork.
The title and the artwork was yeah. was the parody. There was no musical parody element of it, but yeah, it was an homage, a parody. Well, let's jump over into the main body of it and get that done.
Let's do it. Keep that in.
Keep that in. Suffer by Bad Religion. Let's do the Wikipedia ting. So it was released on the 8th of September 1988.
Yeah.
And it was recorded in April 1988 at West Beach Recorders in Hollywood, which was owned by Brett Gurwitz, the then guitarist and co-songwriter. Oh, the then recently returned guitarist.
Right, yeah.
Because I've got my copy of the CD as well, so I'll be taking information from that as well. I've got that sitting there. So it was produced and arranged by Bad Religion. I'm guessing that it was mainly Brett. But basically, this is their third full-length album. Mm-hmm. They changed their lineup a little bit after their first album and then released Into the Unknown, which I quite like it, but it's very different to every other Bad Religion album. There's like keyboards and it's a bit proggy and it's sort of weird.
I've heard, you know, I've actually not had the pleasure of listening to that back to front. There's a couple of tracks I'm familiar with on it.
It was not easy to get for a long time. It was kind of scrubbed. And then I think on their 30th anniversary or something like that, they put out like a cleaned up version of it. But it was one that they did try to sweep under the rug for a little bit.
Interesting, because I think we've spoken about this on the podcast before, but you know, Neil Young did something very similar, but towards the end of his career. So it's interesting that Bad Religion decided to be experimental so early on.
Yeah, well, I think Gurwitz might have left Greg Graffin as sort of the main in charge guy, and he is a bit more. Mind you, so is Gurwitz. I mean, the reason that Epitaph Records is called Epitaph, I believe, is because they were listening to a King Crimson album, and one of the lyrics in a King Crimson song is something like, "Let something something be my epitaph." And they were like, "Ooh, Epitaph, that's a cool word." And so just called the record label that. So, you know, they're not opposed to it as people. Also, 21st Century Digital Boy is like, you know, 20th Century Schizoid Man by King Crimson. So, you know, there are clues. Then they split up after that, and then they regrouped a slight different version. Greg Graffin with the drummer who appears on this, Pete Finestone, and Greg Hetson, who previously of Circle Jerks, and a bass player, Tim Gallegos from Wasted Youth. And they did an EP called Back to the Known, which was a bit more punky. And then they were on tour a lot. And then Gallegos left and Jay Bentley came back. So they were back to sort of the original drummer, singer, bass player. And then Brett Gurwitz got clean and sober and then came back to do. He filled in when Hetson wasn't available for a show and then eventually joined with both of them doing the guitars and stuff. So Greg Hetson was in Bad Religion for a very long time. I think he left maybe within the last 10 years. Brett Gurwitz is still a member of Bad Religion, but he doesn't tour with them anymore. He like writes and records on the albums and stuff. And so that came around because he left again after this at certain points. But at the moment, in 1988, we are looking at Greg Graffin on lead vocals and backing vocals, Brett Gurwitz on guitar and backing vocals, Greg Hetson on guitar, Jay Bentley on bass and backing vocals, Pete Finiston on drums. The backing vocals in the credits in the album are known as the Oohs and Ahs, which is very, very nice. Additional musicians on this, we've got 3/4 of L7 appearing on this.
Right, I was going to say that it appears that all of the additional musicians are women, which is nice. Yep. And rare to see on a punk album from 1988.
Yes, well, they had been, I think there'd been a... L7 had a sort of a tour that was like promoting acceptance of reproductive rights. And sure. Bad Religion had appeared on some or maybe even all of those dates, had been like very much like, oh yeah, no, we'll throw in for that as well. So Danita Sparks and Susie Gardner provide additional guitar on Best for You, which ends in like a big guitar solo freak out. So clearly everyone was just piling on that, which is fun. And then Jennifer Finch does backup vocals on Part Two, The Numbers Game. So, yep, we've got a lot of, although I think they don't get credited in the liner notes. In the liner notes, they're, two of them are mentioned.
Oh, that's interesting.
In the thanks to bit, thanks to all our moms, Ross, Drum Doctor, the guys at CRES, Eddie Stryker, Big Dick, Danita Sparks, Jennifer Finch.
Fuck Susie.
Yeah, fuck Susie, apparently. I don't know what she did to be overlooked like that, but there you go. It's 15 songs long and 26 minutes.
Yeah.
Perfect. This is precisely what we want here. The artwork album features a drawing of a teenager on fire wearing a T-shirt with Bad Religion's Crossbuster logo. That was by Jerry Mahoney.
Reminds me of King of the Hill for some reason.
It's got that suburban vibe.
Yeah. Beavis and Butthead type.
Yeah, it is. It's that, yeah, middle America kind of thing. Although I suppose it's probably based on California as well, but like suburban California. The person on the cover has been taken by the band as a mascot. Boy on Fire is his name. You can also be seen on accessories, T-shirts and stuff. NoFX paid homage to the cover art on Surfer, which depicts a surfer on fire wearing a wetsuit with NoFX's prohibited FX symbol on the back. That was by Mark DeSalvo. We covered that on our Surfer episode. It's been sort of received. Rolling Stone gave it 3 out of 5. Spin gave it 7 out of 10. All Music gave it 4. It's strange. It's sort of not as... It's very heralded by the people who love it, and by other people they sort of go, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Kerrang called it the 99th most influential rock album of all time.
Wow.
Whereas LA Weekly gave it number 6 on the top 20 punk albums in history.
Ooh.
In a fan poll, Do What You Want was cited as one of the best Bad Religion songs of all time, along with American Jesus and Along the Way. Rancid's Tim Armstrong has said, What Can You Do is his favourite Bad Religion track.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Or at least that's
good.
What people assumed he said.
Wait, no, is it pretty good? I might need to have another listen. Is that the one that I don't like?
Oh, what can you do?
Yeah, I'm not. Well, we'll get into it.
Fair enough. There's 15 songs and they don't last very long, so if you don't like one of them, another one will be along soon.
Oh, yeah, I'm not complaining at all.
Interestingly, Epitaph Records had stopped as well. It started and then stopped. And Epitaph Records was restarted in 1988 so they could release Suffer, but they actually released the self-titled album from L7 prior to that, earlier in the same year.
Oh, okay.
So L7 and Bad Religion were proper palling around at the time. I don't know any more than that about it, but there you go. Engineering is credited to the legendary Starbolt and Donnell Cameron. Spiritual advisor, Henro Kushchev. Could be someone well-known and important, and I just simply don't know. But that is all we need to know to get launched in. That's all we need to know to get launched into Suffer by Bad Religion. So let's just start with general impression, size, and shape. What did you reckon to this album, Red? Had you heard it before? Was this one you knew?
Yeah, this is one of, you know, I was about to say one of the few Bad Religion albums that I'm familiar with. I'm actually familiar with quite a few Bad Religion albums. They've just made far too many.
They've made a lot of albums. They're a prolific band.
I was going through Wikipedia. So from when they release this album, they then release a new album every year until 1999. That is the only year that they don't release an album. Or is it 1998? It's one of those years.
They release in 89, 90, 92, 93, 94, 96, 98, 2000. 2002, 2004, 2007, 2010, 2013. I think that the longest, True North and Age of Unreason, there's 6 years between them, and that is by far the longest.
On Wikipedia, that it's got all the EPs, and there's like a compilation in 95 as well. Like, they did release something.
Oh, yeah, they did, yeah.
It's crazy. Like, it's real prolific shit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's partly because they've got more than one songwriter in the band. Gurwitz and Graffin, they write separately and they write together. Mm-hmm. On Wikipedia, it's got writers Greg Graffin, and it alternates both of them. So it takes less time. I don't know, but you know, it's like if you look at NoFX, who we're talking about here, everything is done by Mike. Occasionally, you get a Melvin co-written thing, or Melvin will write a full song like I Melvin or something like that. And so that's probably why they're able to do that kind of thing. But yes, so you knew about that one. Do you feel favorably about this one? Did you? Has that changed?
Yeah, it is a Bad Religion album I prefer over many others. Mm-hmm. It's not the top of my list, but I'd say it's one that I'm very, very satisfied with listening to. I mean, like, it's got some of Bad Religion's best stuff, and I think it's the quintessential Bad Religion album. I think if I was getting you into them, I'd probably give you this. I think it gives you a flavor of what they do.
Right.
I think it's a really good start point for anyone getting into them.
So what, which albums would you put above this?
I'm a fan of No Control because it has my favorite song on it. You, which obviously, same as a lot of people, I became familiar with through the Tony Hawk's Skater games.
Can't get away from that little gateway drug.
I like some later stuff. I like what's got like this True North, the one with that.
True North is great. I thought that was wonderful. I really, really like True North.
Empire Strikes First, I think, is very strong.
Process of Belief is a big one for me because that one was
The Descent of Man.
Yeah.
I mean, there's loads of great.
The Grey Race I really, really like.
Against the Grain.
Yeah. The thing is that they generally, they're like a workhorse band. They put out a good Bad Religion album every, more often than they don't. And it's like, this is great.
Reminds me a little bit of Cancer Bats in that regard, who are just always touring, or at least were the last time I checked. They're just constantly touring and releasing stuff. I don't know if they've kept that up in recent years, but I know like 5 years ago they were releasing, you know, new studio albums most years, and just an endless tour that appeared to have started 5 years ago and just never ended.
it's funny, isn't it, because sort of Bad Religion sort of slowed down largely because their singer is also professor of evolutionary biology at Cornell University, mm-hmm. and was at UCLA teaching paleontology before that and stuff like that. So it's sort of, it's like, well, term time I've got to do this, but in the summer I'll do Warp Tour. And also, I mean, when you look at the lyrics of certainly this album and many of their other ones, you're like, there is an aspiring professor in this mix, isn't there?
Right.
There is this sort of little stereotype that they are the thinking punk's favorite band.
Although we never gave Dexter from Offspring credit for being, I'm pretty sure that he has a degree in aviation.
Oh, he might be an aviator as well, I don't know. I think did we mention that he had a PhD and that he'd sort of like mapped out the HIV virus or partially was involved in
maybe
that? Yeah, he's got a PhD in like biology, some sort of thing. And yeah, he's like, part of his work was like helping sort of map out the genes of the HIV virus, and which is helping combat it and stuff like that. So yeah, and I think is Milo from The Descendants like a physicist or a chemist or something? Yeah. Well, I mean, Milo Goes to College wasn't just a joke title. It was like, that was quite literal. So we're dealing with smart punks, and there are you don't have to have a PhD to be smart. I'm not one of those jerks, but they sort of seem to aspire to a little more. They're not quite as nihilistic as a lot of hardcore bands of the time, maybe. Yeah. There seems to be a bit more going on, but let's begin at the beguin. So you are the government. And if someone says, what is a Bad Religion riff? yeah. I think of this one.
I think this really sets out its store really nicely.
Mm.
I think that this is one of the best tracks on the album.
Yes. Great opener. I mean, if NoFX were inspired by anything, it was get a good fucking opener.
How have they, like, it's only 1 minute, 21 seconds. There's a lot to it for a song that is less than 90 seconds long.
Yeah, it really is. Because that chorus hook is just fucking great. Because it starts with, you are the government. And that sounds like a real sort of hardcore sort of snotty. Yeah, you're the government. ACAB includes the government now, right, guys? And then it's like, you are jurisprudence. Like, I don't know Latin. I'm sorry. I don't know what that means. and so it sort of makes you sort of really pumped and feel stupid at the same time, which
is definitely their bag.
I mean, do you know what? I've never felt that they use any of this sort of language to speak down. I think they're actually crediting you with intelligence that certainly I don't possess. And that's the only thing that stops it from being. Some people might get the arsehole with it. And that's
sure.
I get it. That's fine. But that, I think that says more about how you respond to difficult concepts than how bad religion is treating you, to be honest. Because I've always thought that they broadly are not speaking down to you. They're speaking up to you, if anything. They're speaking to the height of your intelligence. They're not dumbing it down.
Yeah, absolutely. They're like the Stuart Lee of punk at this time, you know. It is accessible, but like I think that Stuart Lee is relatively accessible, like, to a lot of to more people than just his fans. I think there are people that would get what he's doing, because there's like real detail to it. But as you said, like, at no point will he doesn't like to talk down. Like, he likes to talk at you as if you know what he's understanding, or as if you know his references, whether you do or don't. Because I think it's better when art is delivered that way, because you can always go away and do a little bit of research, and then you don't need to dilute the points that they're trying to make, or the language that they're using.
Yeah, I mean, I can literally say that someone I was doing a gig two nights ago, and someone was trying out a new bit about a quirk of the banking system in the UK.
Sure.
Ha 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 ha. Right. but that can be made funny. I know that because I've seen people do it.
Yeah.
I'm not claiming to have done it myself. I don't understand the banking system well enough, but I've seen people do it. And someone was trying it, and they hadn't thought it through sufficiently. They were sort of playing with the idea on stage to see if they could get something out of it. And a member of the audience literally said, "Why are you trying to make a joke from that? It's never going to be funny." "Why don't you do a joke about Boris or something?" Boris being Boris Johnson, former Prime Minister. And it was like, okay, so because he is inherently buffoonish, that is easy for jokes, but banks are serious and dull, therefore no jokes. And it's like, you know, some people do think that way, but not many of them, to be fair. A lot of people go, you could make something funny about virtually anything. You just have to be good at it. And I think that Bad Religion are good at that. Whereas...
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think they're that funny.
Bad Religion? No. I mean,
I do want to see Greg Graffin at the open mic, but I'm not sure if I'd love his material.
Greg Graffin does a thing live where he sort of, there's a song on True North, Robin Hood in Reverse.
Oh yeah.
Where he says, "Here's the church, here's the steeple, open up the doors, corporations are people. Wait, what did he say? What the fuck did he say?" And you know that he does like a sort of a surprised eyebrows raised look around in between, "What did he say? What the fuck did he say?"
A double take.
Yeah, exactly. Take. He does his own double take, even though he knows what he's going to do. And like, and I love that. I always enjoy it when singers are surprised by what they've just sung. It's a real Biafra move. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
that sort of high pantomime behavior. That is as funny as Bad Religion gets, but that's okay. They're not there for that.
Do you think that there is an album that you would comfortably say might be the best punk album ever?
I think with every year that passes and with every step that punk takes away from that original da-da-da-da, oh no, anarchy, if you could say there was a best punk album maybe of the 70s,
sure, yeah,
but after that it becomes so wide, you're like, well, Bad Religion doesn't sound like The Damned, doesn't sound like NoFX, doesn't sound like whoever, you know, it sort of, it becomes too broad a thing because, you know, does that make sense? It's like saying, what's the best metal album? It's like, well, are you going all the way back to like Black Sabbath's first record to now? That's a massive length of time.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, all you can really do is go by your favorite, which is why I think best. It's sort of, that never means anything.
But also, Fresh Fruit and Rotten Vegetables.
Oh, okay. Well, if you just want to answer it with that, then sure. But again,
I just think it is.
But I know, but that is still ultimately your favourite rather than the best. That's the thing. It's sort of. I find best to be such a useless.
Yeah, no, you're right.
When it
comes
to that kind of thing, that's it. It's in fact something that Stuart Lee does all the time, where he talks about, and this is the best album. I think at one point he goes, this is the best album by Miles Davis. I'm like, did Miles Davis do like 1,000 albums? Seems weird.
It's kind of blue though, isn't it?
Well,
isn't,
I mean,
that, like,
again,
largely considered to be.
Well, yeah, it's the most popular one by the fans, but again, what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's like,
yeah, but he went mad and started using electric trumpets. You can't trust a man who's using an electric trumpet. Sounds like an elephant.
Sure, but you know, they just repurposed them into like weed vaporizers, didn't they? That's how they got invented.
But, yeah, probably.
I mean, yeah, I fear we've gotten off topic, but basically, Bad Religion are brilliant at doing like thought-provoking, interesting, uncowardly lyrics that speak up to you without sounding like they're making you feel dumb, which is, and I know it's popular to bash them these days, particularly since that because of when they broke up, but like I've always found Anti-Flag to be like politically what they were saying I was very rarely disagreeing with.
Yeah,
but they managed to do it in such a cringe way. Just like,
yeah,
like, oh, fuck off, Snowflake. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, oh god, you're woke cunts. It's like, it's so.
I was always like, I'd go and see them because they were on every festival. Like,
they were busy.
Like, I've seen them at Download like twice. I've seen them at Slam Dunk twice. Anyway, I would be watching them and I'd be like, hey, no one is questioning the skill here and how tight they are.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But like, yeah, I always watch them being like, sure, but it is all a bit lame, this, isn't it?
it's like punk that does its homework.
It feels like their mum is outside in like a car, like in an estate car, waiting for them to finish. Like, are the boys done yet?
Yeah.
I don't know, but, like.
Yeah. Did you get an encore tonight? Oh, I'm so proud of you. It's like. Did you coerce any girls into sex, Justin? Oh, you did. What a good boy. You know, that kind of thing.
And like, they get really excited by the prospect of a sleepover.
It is like, you know, when you see like children who have clearly like just battered their parents into submission verbally to be able to wear their Spider-Man costume to just go to the shops. What? And they're like wearing their Spider-Man. It's like they go, but I want to dress like Joe Strummer today, Mum. It's like, no, we're going to church. You put on a nice, no, I'm running. So turn up going, yeah, I am dressed as Joe Strummer today. Oh, I'm so cool. it's sort of a bit like that, I always found. But
I did some research like early on when I first got into them, when I was like 18 or something. And I'm pretty sure that their lead singer, at least, I'm not sure if any more of them have had a similar experience, but his family were militant vegetarians growing up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I find quite, you know, like hearing about militant vegetarians, you know, from like the 80s. And you're sort of like, oh, we've got vegans these days. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how you can be that militant by eating fish.
I think his parents owned like the only vegetarian restaurant in Pittsburgh or some shit, wasn't it? It was like that kind of, kind of thing. And it's like, okay. We've deviated from the topic, but basically
talking about today?
We're talking about Suffer by Bad Religion, and we've only gotten to the first track. But yeah, it like I said, it's a riff that a million bands have tried to emulate. That's my... A lot of riffs on this album are like that. But you've sort of got... I mean, a lot of people, Fat Mike certainly included, put this down as like the beginning of melodic hardcore.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
And I can see this as, this is definitely a step forward.
And I suppose that's where I understand Mike's comparison between NoFX and Bad Religion, because I know that he always says, oh, we're just a Bad Religion covers band. And I've never really heard it. Like, I always see, I see Fat Mike as a songwriter. And whilst I know Gerwitz and Graffin are very good songwriters, I still see Bad Religion as a band, and I know that's probably completely unhelpful, but like when you say this is the start of melodic hardcore, then I understand Mike's comparison, because I do consider both of them to be melodic hardcore bands.
Yeah, and the thing is that I think it's just because Mike's, you know, they're like Mike's favorite band, or they have been at some point, or they're in the top, they're constantly top three or whatever, you know, along with like RKL and stuff like that. And so I think that it's just the idea that you can actually write a song that's actually catchy and it still be a million miles an hour and aggressive and all the rest of it. It's amazing. It's, As an opener, I can't think of a better song to actually start the album with.
Yeah.
Really, really exciting. Hello, everyone. Eddie here. Red and I hope you're enjoying our show. If you have been and would like to help us make it a little more easily, then you can donate to us at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/punkrockelite, or you can look in the show notes for our link tree. If you can't help us financially, we totally understand, but would love it if you spread the word to other people who would like this podcast. We thank you for your continued support. We massively appreciate it. Back to the show. Move on to second track, 1,000 More Fools.
Great riff to start. And this is a Gerwitz as well. So he's written this one.
I think the riffier ones tend to be him.
Yeah.
I think they both often write on acoustic.
That makes sense.
And then transposed to electric. But I think if it's riffier, then it's often Gerwitz, because, you know, he's got to play the riff. So, you know, that's what he likes to do. One thing I've found interesting, and I've just been thinking about production more because we've been doing that lately. The guitars are really, like, not heavy. They're really, like, clean.
Yeah.
They're, like, driven, but and they sound great. I think they're absolutely wonderful.
It does sound typical, I think, to what guitar sounds generally were around this time. I think what is different is like the rhythm, like, because I think Gerwitz has got a really interesting guitar rhythm on a lot of these riffs, and I think that makes it stand out. But the guitar tone, I think, is pretty typical of the time.
Yeah absolutely. It was like, because if you saturated it anymore, people would be like, oh my god, I can't believe Bad Religion have gone metal. It'd been like the same album, but if the tones were different, they're like, oh, it's a metal album, I can't believe they did a metal album, that is bullshit. And the harmonies are brilliant on this one as well. I think this is the first time we get more than just a little bit of going on.
But yes, yeah.
I like this. I should point out the inside, the CD, and I assume on the vinyl as well, the lyric sheet is just I'm going to show you here, it's just a photograph of a wall in a bedroom that they've just written all of the lyrics on in marker pen and just taken a photo, which is pretty cool. So
that's delightful.
Yeah.
I bet Mike, Fat Mike, is livid that they don't still have that wall.
So yeah, yeah. That's
right. Put it in the museum.
We got the Suffer Wall. What he's going to do on his tour, just point at it and go, look, they wrote all of their lyrics on there. So it's pretty cool. So let me see. The meek shall reign on earth. Phantom myriads of sane bucolic birth. I've seen the rapture in a starving baby's eyes. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't think Bad Religion like religion.
There's something about their logo that makes me think that. Yeah.
I mean, they said that the logo was basically, you know how in the early days of punk, people would be like, no, no, they were just wearing swastikas because it pissed people off. It's like, yeah, yeah, of course. Well, Bad Religion had a bit of a think and went, how can we piss people off and not be that? And
they went,
oh, this, there we go. That's a bit more, it's a bit less appalling, isn't it? So we'll do that instead. And I'm delighted that they did that instead. The Crossbuster logo has been sort of pretty much from the get-go. I think, you know, they've had that longer than anything. And they were all like 16 when they started and stuff. So they're like, yeah, obviously we thought that was amazing. Someone came up with this and they're like, no way, that is brilliant. And it's and it's just become a thing now, which is great. So we got how much is enough? So we got so about how people should feel ashamed of their greed.
Yeah.
And this was in the last year of Reagan's presidency.
Right, yeah, of course.
So they'd had 8 years or, you know, 7, 8 years of Reagan and seen how that had changed the layout, which makes sense. Also, they managed to just have the line, a line that is three words, which is rapacity, tenacity, capacity.
Why not? Yeah, no, absolutely.
I only really know what two of those words mean anyway. So, so that's good. I'll have to find out what rapacity means. Don't at me. I'll have found out by now. You could level the accusation that a lot of these songs sound quite similar.
Yeah.
Which I don't hate.
I mean, I think you can say that of everything Bad Religion has made. If anything, I'm impressed at this point that they've stuck to the brief.
People love to say that Bad Religion have made the same album over and over again. I don't think that's true. But I think they have made the same album more than once. I just don't think it's every time. Sometimes it is more apparent than others, but I'd say something like True North and Process of Belief are not similar sounding records. Yeah. And I don't think either of them particularly sound like Suffer.
Yeah.
But other people are less forgiving about it. And I think that there is a thing of, I think some people do see Bad Religion as being very pleased with themselves, with their lyrical content. Like we've discussed, I've always felt that they actually tread that line very, very well.
Yeah, I think if anything, they're kind of proud of the volume of work they've made, and I think that they should be.
Fat Mike has said, if you don't put out new music, you become a legacy band.
Yeah.
And I don't think Bad Religion are that, or have been that.
They've never been that.
No. And it's fine if you want to be one of those. I really don't, you know, I can't. If someone's making money out of playing music, they've won, really, haven't they? You know, you know, you can either go, or, you know, because, I mean, we know comedians who are doing the same 20 minutes they've been doing for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
In some cases. Some people don't even update their references.
Yeah.
They're still seeing three similarly dressed men on the front row and go, oh, look, Westlife's in. Is there no more recent boy band you could update that to? Nope. Just gonna say it's this band who haven't been a band.
BTS, mate. Come on.
Yeah, something, anything. To be honest, I'd accept One Direction from them lot. At least that would be, you know, this century. But anyway, we've got When, number four. What this one does, my notes here is this has got the melodic hardcore thing of the riff going da la la da 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 la la da da. There's some chord relationship that is like that for a lot of things. It's like, how do we finish this riff? We could just go, da, da, and then start it again. I go, yeah, all right then. And we go, oh, Bad Religion do that all the time. Yeah, and everyone who bought this album does that all the time as well. So have a go at Bad Religion. I think some people are being a little bit myopic. But anyway, was this the one that you didn't rate as highly?
What, this particular song?
Yes.
I think the first half is, you know, I don't really have any notes for the first half. I think it's a really, really solid start the album. I like my interest wanes in the second half, but then obviously it's got Do What You Want, so it picks right back up again.
Yes, absolutely. I like this one. It's again, there's always a hook to distinguish these songs.
Yeah.
And that long when is just great. And it is. I mean, to be honest, I've got very few notes, like you say, for most of this, because it's like critiquing, you know, Citizen Kane or something.
It's the good stuff.
They've done it really well. What do you want me to say?
Yeah.
All you can really do is pick out your favorite bits. Number five, Give You Nothing, which I really, really like.
Yeah, it's really good.
This one is interesting because on the lyric sheet in here, written on the wall, the song is called Tom Clement.
Wait, what?
It just says Tom Clement right at the top here. I'll show you on the...
So is that the original name of the song?
Actually,
and could they not have just painted over that?
Now I mention it, it says Tom Clement ellipsis. So it's Tom Clement ... But it's the lyrics. Hey, everybody's looking, but they never can see. This one is this one's great because it's got the first sort of tempo change, where it's got the slow burn it. It sounds a bit like 21st Century Digital Boy style Bad Religion. Respectable, despicable, they seem all the same. And then it goes back to the fast as well. And I think that's a real hardcore move now, the slowdown for the pit bit and the sort of pick it back up again and stuff, which is, it's cool as fuck, and it's just done so well.
Yeah. Apparently it references him in the song, Tom Clement.
Oh, does it?
Something about Tom took his life in his mother's car.
Oh. In that case, Tom Clement may well have been a friend of theirs, or possibly a minor well-known person. I don't know.
R.I.P. Tom.
Yes, R.I.P. Tom. Thank you for the song that lives on. There we go. That was a little poem that Red and I just freestyled. freestyle poetry. How low can a punk get? So, yeah, I think this one must have, I think Give You Nothing has got a real sense of this has influenced a lot of sounds as well. Like,
yes,
with that slowdown and the tempo change, it's like you can hear that everywhere.
Yeah.
All over the shop. And then it picks back up again, and it's just great. Land of Competition.
Another good one. Not one of the best, but just a really, really solid track, this.
Notable for the first sort of big guitar solo. There's been little flourishes here and there, but has got an actual solo section of it. I like this one. It fits really, really nicely. It's placed really, really well. And it's one of those ones where I didn't realize what Give You Nothing was about, or partially about, but Land of Competition is like one of those character case study things. Yeah. There was a girl, da, 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 you know, all that kind of thing. A bit like that Crash Test Dummies song.
Yeah.
but you know, and Mike loves a character song. We know this much. Mm-hmm. And then there was a few different people doing different things, but failing because of the land of competition and the lack of compassion in the world and stuff like that. I think it's really, really great. Number seven, Forbidden Beat. I think that is Bad Drugs.
This is the one that I remember more than any song on this album, like more than Do What You Want. For some reason, Forbidden Beat really sticks in my head.
It's a good one.
It is a good one. It's one of my favourites. It may be my favourite on the album, potentially, but it just sticks in my head in a way. It has like more staying power than anything else on here, and that surprises me.
It's interesting, actually. It follows Land of Competition, which starts to see there's a girl who's afraid of the world. And then Forbidden Beat starts, There Was a Boy Who Had Too Many Toys.
Yeah, and then doesn't the song "You" by Bad Religion also start with a similar thing? There's a place where everyone can be happy, the most beautiful place in the fucking world.
The whole fucking world.
That one.
Yeah, there's a lot of these character case
little
stories.
Boys and little girls.
Yes, little boys, little girls. Innocent people who get taken advantage of by cruel situations.
Yes, because this is the rare occurrence of a band singing about boys and girls, but at no point does it feel noncy.
We're back to Anti-Flag.
Oh, but then they did release that song Broken, which is a little, it's like
she
a little
said, place, but I'm broken. Barely a teen part of the scene. I think that's more about, I don't know that that's a romantic song in any way. I think it's about all the things that can be broken in a person. They can come from a broken home, they can have a broken society that's ultimately, yeah. I mean, I can't remember the song vividly. That's the problem with these lyrics. They're too difficult to remember. I'm not clever enough to fully remember them all, so I have to squint at a photograph of a wall to work out what they're saying, which isn't as great. But, so I think Forbidden Beat is about drugs.
Yeah.
And it is a Graffin Gerwitz co-creation, so it would make sense that if Gerwitz has had something to say about it, he's just got clean at this point, so that would make sense to me. But yeah, really, really mm-hmm. great. A little highlight, I think. Another highlight for me is Best for You.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I suspect that this is the end of side one.
Oh, okay. Suffer like kicks off side two.
Because you've got the fade out. Obviously, I got this on CD, and then I've listened to it on like iPods and stuff and MP3 players. But I think because it's got a sort of a fade out and then just that guitar freak out at the end, which features two of L7 joining in with it, I think that denotes the end of a side to me. And in fact, looking at, on Wikipedia, the track one listing does have it as the last, is side one and side two. It is Best for You, which is the end.
I think the
vocals are the standout, and it's sort of, it's about kicking back against people who want you to live a life in the shape that they think it should be, stuff like that. It's that individualistic thing which I like a lot.
It's got some great solo guitar in the background as well.
Yeah, and this song is like 1 minute 55, but mm-hmm. it's not. It's like 1 minute 20 because the end. It's like an extra chorus and then just a massive big solo freak out, like a Frank Zappa fucking thing going on at the end, which is great. Really, really good fun. Then we get on to the title track, Suffer.
I think this is a great title track. I think it does everything that is on the album. Like, it's a really good, like, they've chosen correctly. This should be the self-titled track because this does everything the album does succinctly.
Yes, yeah, it's all in there. There's it's got that sort of rapid bridge thing of just sort of almost like a chant, like a hypnotic, sort of chant, and then into the "Always Had to Suffer." His voice sounds amazing on this one. Like the vocal take is great. It's got all the harmonies on it. It's got a solo in it too. It is. This is the microcosm of the album.
Yeah,
the
exactly. Album.
The album Suffer is the song Suffer writ large.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not even that large because it's only 26 minutes long. I'm pretty sure that is where Mike got his concept of how long punk albums should be, because he's like, 25 minutes is a good length for a punk album. 30,
it is,
and
to
if you go
fair.
Over 35, that's too much. And then Rancid were like, no. We have got 1,000 songs. We need to put them all on, thanks. I think maybe for Rancid's style of punk, it's a bit different, but for this kind of, but for melodic hardcore, I think, 25 minutes, because there is a recurring sound. These songs all sound like they're from the same album. They're not a disparate collection. It's a cohesive whole. And that's generally how I listen to it as well. I don't really pick a song from it. I like put the whole thing on. Which is how it's just how I do it. Obviously, people can do precisely what they wish, but from a CD and cassette generation that I'm from, you put the album on and listen to it and then change it and put on a different one. That's generally how we tended to experience stuff. And you can tell that this was written in that world. And especially because the two sides work as like mini albums as well. Mm-hmm. Like, because you know, you have all that kind of thing, and then you start off Suffer could have been a an opening track, and it sort of is. Wonderful. Then we have Delirium of Disorder.
Yeah, it's good. I like this because it it's you can hear the bass a little bit more in this, which is nice.
Yeah, it's not the most bass heavy of mixes, that's true.
Which I really enjoy because I think that I like hearing the bass in Bad Religion.
Yeah. I think, yeah, from the production perspective, I love the sound of the guitars. The drums sound good. There could be a bit more kick. There could be a bit more bass guitar.
Yeah.
But broadly speaking, it sounds proper good fun. A lot of these riffs do sound similar.
I love the vocal take, you know, like on the chorus line. And then obviously, yeah, like it slowed it down for like the intro of the track.
It's great.
It's really unusual sounding. It's brilliant.
That's a bit of their prog coming through. That was like, Gerwit saying, Graffin, you get one prog thing.
Yeah.
Or we get one prog thing each. I'm having a guitar freak out with all of my friends. What are you having?
Delirium.
Delirium. What are you saying, Greg? Delirium. Greg, stop. Delirium. Back off, Greg. I don't like this. Delirium. Oh, God, I need to go to rehab again. That's what I imagine it was like. Good fun, this one. Life is the sieve through which my anarchy straining.
Yeah.
Sure. My life is the sieve. Are you sure you want to finish that thought? I do want to finish that thought. Okay. My life is a sieve. Yeah, why not? Have it. Track number 11, part 2, brackets the numbers game.
We get part 2 and part 4, but no 1 or 3.
Not good enough. Maybe they were on different albums, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, you know how brackets have got a recurring thing where they have a song called Warren's Song Part Whatever. And I think, and they'd like turn up, like, there's one album where it's like Part 9. And then they just have them on various albums. And then they did one album that was entirely called Warren's Song Part 17, Warren's Song Part 6, Warren's Song Part 37. It was like just something they did. And I don't know why I never looked into it, but I thought, oh, that's kind of quirky and weird. Fun for them. But that's possibly where they got that from. This is a Bad Religion song that features prominently the line One Nation Under God. And I feel like there's at least half a dozen Bad Religion songs where they shout One Nation Under God as part of the lyrics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's a lot to explore with that, and that's what they tend to be doing. And this feels like really like a blueprint for a lot of melodic hardcore songs, which is like a sort of a fairly monotonal verse followed by like a catchy chorus. So you've got the sort of it's a bit more nuanced than that, but you've got that kind of thing, and then the big catchy chorus on it and stuff. That's what I got from it.
Yeah.
Is this the where you get to in the album where you sort of go off the boil a bit?
Yeah, you know, like I'm just like, and because I don't think any of this stuff is bad.
Sure.
I just think at this point of the album, I want something a little bit different, and I don't get that, but I do get Do What You Want a little bit later, and that's like, you know, as been mentioned earlier, one of Bad Religion's best songs. So that perks me up a little bit. And, you know, I get towards the end, I can finish the album without any major complaints. I just think that this part of the album isn't as strong as other parts. I mean, like that middle bit with Forbidden Be, Best For You and Suffer, that's a pretty solid three tracks in a row.
Yep.
And then I think up top, you've got some really, really solid selections. Just at the end of the album, I don't think it's got its best stuff apart from Do What You Want.
Yes, that very much is a welcome lift, isn't it? Because we've got...
But it's still good. It's still good.
What Can You Do, which is notable for like a change in tempo.
Yeah, I do think this is my least favourite track on the album. But again, it's not a bad track.
Yeah. It's sort of a bit more pop punk. as we'd understand it today, maybe. It's got a sort of a rock and roll groove to it. You like expect the guitars like da na 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 na. It's got to be honest, I like it as having a different groove to the you know, which, because you know, you need to mix it up a little bit. And I like the melody and stuff. It's the longest song on the album by a fair lick. Yeah. And it's also got the longest guitar solo. I think it's the most classic rock.
Yeah.
The most rock sounding song, I suppose.
When you said it was Rancid's favourite Bad Religion song, I was like, oh, that scans, but it also does make me think less of Rancid.
Well, only Tim Armstrong, to be fair. Because Tim sings on Television by Bad Religion on one of the other albums.
But come on, this is your favourite.
But this sounds the most like Rancid would do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rancid are sort of quite old fashioned.
They're quite trad.
They're quite trad. You know, the sort of. I mean, that was why it was so weird when they announced they were doing a split with NoFX covering each other's songs. You know, back in the day, everyone was like, what? And like you said at the time, you're like, oh, weird that it wasn't Lagwagon or someone. And it was like, yeah, that's what you'd anticipate. You'd have that kind of thing. But and that's also why they did a load of really old old NoFX songs that they could turn into Rancid-y songs.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, if you want our thoughts on that, go and listen to the NoFX Rancid splits from BYO. So yeah, what can you do? I'm fine with it. I don't dislike any of the songs on this record. I prefer some of them, but
same.
Yeah, this one I like as a palate cleanse. And also I think I like it because of the anticipation of Do What You Want.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, man. Come on. I think this is my favorite on the album. It's like a minute and 7 seconds long. It's everything you want from a Bad Religion song.
Fly like a Superman and die like a champion. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, hey.
Whatever that means. Yeah, hey. I love it. there's a bit where Pennywise go full mask off. They've like covered this song live on more than one occasion.
And really?
And when you watch them play it, you're like, oh, I see what Pennywise are now.
Yeah, because that's, you know, when NoFX are like, we're a Bad Religion covers band, you're like, no, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I really like Pennywise, but.
Sure.
Hey, no, but who came first, to be fair? Like, they would have been around at similar times, right?
I think Bad Religion started comfortably.
Yeah, they're early
Pennywise.
80s, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. They're late, very late 70s, I think. Maybe.
Whoa, wow.
Maybe. But if not, definitely very early 80s. Pennywise rock band. Thank you, Google, for showing me the rock band Pennywise. Formed in 1988.
Oh, right.
So they formed the year this was released.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of bands forming around 88, Smashing Pumpkins. And yeah.
Some would argue were summoned by the creation of this album from another dimension. When they do What You Want, they all seem like they're going, this is all we ever wanted. It's a fucking banger. And there's also an interesting thing, because I think it sort of sounds a bit like there's an Offspring story I heard, which was members of Offspring were trying to write like Bad Religion style songs for some like little in joke, and the one Dexter Holland wrote, they changed the lyric. He'd like put in all like they'd put in like loads of like clever words and stuff and shit like that. Then they changed it without changing the music, changed the words, and it became their song All I Want, which is my favourite Offspring song by quite
so
a long
book.
And it even starts off with going, yeah, 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 yeah. Like, it's even got like a yeah, hey little reference thing in it. It's great. It's really, really good. But you're also going, oh, this was the result of a Bad Religion parody competition. Yeah, yeah, it does sound like
it. Yeah, no, like it does, doesn't it? Yeah, no, absolutely.
But it's also great. But, you know, I can't deny I love it. It's so good. Yeah, it might be the shortest song on the album as well. It's like 1:07.
Yeah, it's super short.
It is super short. Oh, there's one that the Pessimistic Lines is 1:10. There's a few like 1 minute 20, 1 minute 30.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, What Can You Do is notably the longest song. It's like 40 seconds longer than other song. I don't think it necessarily warrants it, but hey, you know, it's their album. That is the highlight of the album for me. Do What You Want, fucking brilliant. Part four, The Fossil Index, which is about how humans are going to fuck everything up. And it's got a nice slow groove bit as well. It's got a bit of that variation. I've never got super into this song, only because I'm annoyed that it isn't Do What You Want again. But that's not a reflection of that song. What do you reckon to Fossil Index? Index Fossil.
Yeah, again, another perfectly reasonable track. Again, these last two songs, again, good. Do not dislike anything on this album, but it isn't the strongest stuff on here. So I just, you know, quietly enjoy it.
Yeah. And then we finish with pessimistic lines, 1 minute 10. Pessimism, skeptics, and religious people are at loggerheads. Media lies. What is going on? It's just sort of, you can't trust anything. So, you know, keep your wits about you, kid.
Yeah. I'm glad they end the album like this. Like, I think that, you know, I mean, it's the second shortest track on the album. I think that is how you should end this album.
You wouldn't end it with "Can You Do?"
Sure,
you know that kind of thing.
But they may have ended it with something like "Best for You," which ends on that, you know, sort of like drawn out guitar fade out. And I'm glad that it doesn't end on that.
This needs an abrupt ending. You can fade out in the middle of this album. You can't.
Yeah, I like
you
that.
You can't even leave like a hanging chord. It has to be just like, you know, it has to be very, very abrupt. And
I love that.
Yeah, it's great. And there's no secret tracks or anything like that. Because it's 1988, it was less common in those days. This would have been primarily released on cassette. Cassette and vinyl, maybe some CDs for the audiophiles, but very good chance they didn't. They did a remastered version in 2004, along with How Could Hell Be Any Worse, No Control, Against the Grain, and Generator.
Mm.
So that was Suffer. So what... As this is a NoFX podcast, we've already spoken a bit about what we suspect NoFX, or Fat Mike in particular, took from this.
Mm.
And so what do you reckon are the sort of the main lessons that Mike learned?
I think that, similar to what we said earlier, you know, like, he sees this as the beginning of melodic hardcore, so I think he sees the importance of adding melodies to hardcore music. But I think one of the biggest takeaways is the use of harmonies. I think that this really influenced how Mike uses harmonies moving forward.
This was released the same year as Liberal Animation.
Mm-hmm.
It was released, in fact, this was released while Bad Religion were in the studio recording Suffer.
Right.
Around that time, anyway. Liberal Animation was released 22nd of April, 88. Suffer was recorded in April, 88 and released in September the 8th, 1988. The next album to be released by NoFX, which was on Epitaph, produced by Brett Gurewitz, was S&M Airlines, which features Greg Graffin on the Go Your Own Way. It's got lots of other members of Bad Religion doing the chorus of S&M Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
It was influenced by Bad Religion and Rich Kids on LSD. And I think this is the sort of closest they came to that kind of doing that.
When did Ribbed come out?
Ribbed was out in 1991.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
And again, Brett Gurewitz producing.
Right. Of NoFX's work, I think Ribbed is the closest to this era Bad Religion than I can think off the top of my head. There's
things like Shower Days and stuff.
Yeah.
Which are sort of...
Aside from a couple here and there, I think that Ribbed, like, they're not... It's not as funny a NoFX album as usual. Obviously, you've got New Boobs on there and stuff like that, but... I do think they're attempting to be more serious on Ribbed in line with Bad Religion. So things like brain constipation. Mm. I don't know that I can see a more academic side to NoFX's lyrics.
Yeah, and I think by this time, certainly Mike and Melvin, I think they'd both gone to college and they both had degrees and stuff. Because I think, you know, Mike and Melvin were both sort of quite middle class by the standards of the day and stuff like that. So being college graduates would be expected and, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's the being able to include a melody. And there are moments, I mean, there's songs like I'm a Huge Fan of Bad Religion, which is an out-and-out parody of Bad Religion's music, and a very good one as well, like a very learned thing. I think Mike once said, if you take the 40 best songs by Bad Religion, no other band has got as many songs as good as that.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty fair shout, to be fair.
It's possible. I don't know. I've not actually done the research. But again, Mike uses the term best instead of favorite a lot, and it does rankle with me. But that's just on a personal thing for me. If you've not listened to Suffer by Bad Religion, you could do a lot worse than giving yourself half an hour to give this a listen, because you will hear the embryonic version of so many songs, so many bands that you love. If you're into this kind of punk, then listening to Suffer will give you, it's like sort of seeing the Rosetta Stone, really, isn't it? It's like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, this is where it all came from. So this is like the Nevermind the Bollocks for melodic hardcore.
Right, okay,
you
know
what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
It's like, you know, heard this and it changed lives.
I still think that, because like I think Fresh Fruit and Rotten Vegetables is melodic hardcore.
I think
a lot of these bands are influenced by that, but it is a different era.
I think so, but I think it's also just straight up hardcore, because you've got Chemical Warfare and you've got some songs that are just kind of rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, but even Chemical Warfare does have like a melody to it. I don't know, like
it does, but it's not. There's no harmonies on it. There's no big...
That's my favorite Dead Kennedys track as well.
Chemical Warfare is great. No, I understand what you mean about Fresh Fruit, and because it's sort of before they did the sort of like super fast stuff, and it's still got a bit of surf and sort of weird stuff in there. But I think melodic hardcore as we know it, I think people give it to Suffer for a reason. Also, the band would have been like 22, 23, 24 by the time they were recording this, rather than like when they started out at 16 and then maybe recorded something by the time they were 17, 18. I think that's where they have that thing. Do you know what I mean? They sort of go, oh, yeah, no, this is how it is. Suffer by Bad Religion. Listen to it.
Let us know what you think as well. Is this your favorite Bad Religion album? Do you know, is there a particular album that you think is better than this? We'd love to know.
Which NoFX releases do you think are most influenced by Bad Religion? Where can you see the Bad Religion being worn most clearly on the sleeve? That would be interesting, because I sort of blank when it comes to that. Like when you talk about RKL and stuff, I can point to things like Shut Up Already and Days and Days, where you're like, that's RKL, is that kind of vibe, or they're trying to do an RKL kind of thing. But with Bad Religion, I find it harder. And I also don't like the Pennywise erasure that is implicit in that statement. So punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com, or say hello on Instagram or something. And we'll see you in the outro.
We will.
And we're in the outro. Oh, it's nice doing album reviews.
Yeah, absolutely.
Assessments, I suppose.
I hope this is more in line with what listeners want. Because obviously, like, you know, we've reviewed all of NoFX's back catalogue. So now we're out in the vast desert, sort of like sifting for, I don't know what this metaphor is, but we're trying different things.
We're desert sifting, guys. Come on.
Come on.
Cut us some slack. We're desert sifting.
Look, I've been to see Dune on the weekend.
Ah.
It's the only analogies I know. Sand and worms.
Fair enough. Yeah, neither of those are pleasant analogies. So we'll just say we're looking for stuff to do, because we've got, you know, we've got all of these other things that we can do, and there's still no effects stuff coming up. We didn't even mention the fact that no effects have announced two more UK dates since we've been away,
and we didn't even mention that we may have tickets to one of those dates.
Absolutely, and we may not have mentioned that we should probably thank Ali Bryce, friend of the show,
definitely,
for no real reason. We don't want you lot knowing where we are at any given time. That isn't true. We're going to London.
It's your birthday, right?
It's on my birthday, yes.
And they're playing Slat Fats.
They're playing Slat Fats, White Trash, and The Decline.
Ah, lovely.
I was like, I'd normally try and avoid anything to do with my birthday, but it did seem very, very unusual. It felt very, very strange, because I was like, wait a minute, that number and that month, those are relevant to me. I do have to give that information to people to prove who I am. Oh shit. And the thing is that we were like, oh, we could do both days, I guess, but it's a lot. They did both of those albums when we saw them at Leeds. They are doing Pump Up the Vallum the day before, and because that was the only thing, it was like, oh, they're doing albums that I prefer at Hatfield.
Yes.
But Leeds, come on. But look, hey, it's going to be great. Also, I knew they were going to do Laurie Myers because they were doing Punkin' Drublic. So we're like, do you know what? I'm not going to complain. I'm just going to go, do I get the opportunity to see them one more time? Yes, I do. I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
And now we've done that again with a different set of albums. I'm like, yeah, go on then. So can't argue.
No, we're really, really lucky. We're really looking forward to that. Also, you know, like, there's plenty of good stuff coming up with this podcast, because, you know, we've worked out we can talk about, you know, NoFX influences, Fat Mike's influences, there's peer pressure, you know, albums that came out 94, you know, the same year that the year that punk broke, in air quotes.
The 30th anniversary of all of these records, which is why we're looking at a lot of those this year. We're still doing the interviews. We've still got people coming up. We've got Manchester Punk Festival coming up. We're doing a live show from there.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the middle of getting a guest for that.
Yes,
we should have one. We're still in talks, so we're not going to announce anybody. But, you know, that's going to be a thing. So, you know, it is still worth hanging out with us, guys. We're still of value. God, this is, it's kind of humiliating now I think about it, isn't it? I feel sad now. Anyway, but yeah, what we're saying is, and also, we've also got all of this stuff to do with the Punkin' Drublic tribute. And you know, we've done it. We've got ours in now. Other people are sending in their stuff. We've got to work out how we're releasing it, or more specifics about how we're releasing it. Let us know. Would you buy a vinyl of this? Would you buy a CD? Would you buy a mini disc? Mm-hmm. Nihilism from the Midlife Punk podcast is really going hard on the mini disc thing, because it's nice.
Sounds like he's got a mini disc player, is what that translates as.
I mean, I've got a mini disc player somewhere. It's not one I use day to day, but day to days. I don't have it on me, but there is one in the building that I live in. But apparently you can get like hundreds of recordable mini discs on eBay for like a quid. So that's what he's leaning on. And I thought, well, we'll have a 21st century, it should really just be late 20th century, like the pizza and pasting parties that Minor Threat used to do when they had their EPs, their vinyls, their 7 inches made. Mm-hmm. They'd go and get them printed, and then they'd spend the evening just like cutting them out and gluing them together to make their releases and stuff. So, I mean, we're not going to do that. That sounds awful. We don't need to do that. But yeah, so how would you like that happening? Because, you know, it's getting closer and closer. It's getting too close for my for my tastes, but we'll see how that all goes. Thank you ever so much for listening, everybody, and thank you for being here, Red.
Thank you, Reddy, for having me.
That's all good. We'll see you all later. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Punk Rock Elite. It was a Pick Scraped and Fruitcake co-production by Eddie French and Red Redmond. If you're not following us on Instagram or subscribe to the podcast, please do. The main theme and production was done by Eddie French. Please contact us at punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.